I was going to say that it's really giving Bombshell today in a major way.
It's giving Bombshell today in a major way.
I mean, you look better
luckily,
than ever.
Everyone's talking about it.
Like, everyone's talking about it. Everyone's going to know. You, I was going to say, have been looking so good lately since you've been working out. Not that working out is a prerequisite for looking good, but it has just had the added benefit of looking really good.
It's been... Okay. This is like, this is ultimately also kind of a gender thing, so like that's like a complicated pin in it, but like and it's also funny because I was just thinking that like I think I'm doing some stuff actually a little bit wrong at the gym, because I was like let me just like adjust things because I want to pay more attention to form. But I have also like to speak to it on the level of pure vanity, like it's so cool to feel hot, and like I haven't done a lot of working out, like I'm not, a lot has changed, but like it is funny to see, like, it's funny and, like, you know, pleasurable when you're experiencing it, but, like, big picture, actually, like, deeply off-putting and uncomfortable to see, like, like the way people treat you differently.
Yeah, that's the thing. Is it's like,
more. Like, literally, I'm just like, oh, okay.
I have also...
Like, either I got really funny overnight or, like, I, like, became fuckable in a different kind of way.
Well, my boobs are like, sitting differently now that I've been doing a lot of lifting at the gym.
Yeah, well, my boobs are sitting differently now.
Wait, I mean, like, literally, I have to just say this to you right now. I already showed you this photo, but I need to, like, re-up this photo in your feed. Because look at my breasts in this dress that had no bra. Like, this was a no bra dress.
Yeah, it's been
look at that. Look at that. Look at that photo. Like, I made Matt look at this too on the main episode. But
sorry,
like, it's literally like huge knockers. I was like, what is happening? And something about going to the
time.
Gym. Yeah. Like, something about going to the gym and my form sort of like streamlining has like emphasized how large they look in like essentially everything that I own. And I'm like, whoa, I saw that photo and I was like, I like even my brain, and I've been showing everyone my boobs now for a solid 2 years. Like, it's not like a new concept that I have like huge boobs, but like this was the first time where I'm like, literally move over, Sydney Sweeney. I wrote that article that was like, actually Sydney Sweeney's boobs aren't that big. That was me, because I saw this photo and I went, you know what, she's got nothing on me, bitch. No, but the gym is nice. I was gonna say, like, I think the thing that I feel about the gym these days is I have a completely different relationship to it at my age now, where like in the beginning it was so wrapped up in like my feelings about my body and like how it was perceived to other people and the like sort of like masculinizing effect it had on me early in my transition that I didn't love effect on me in my own mind. I'm not saying that as like a hard and fast rule. I'm saying the way I perceived it.
And where I do it.
Yeah. And it was just, it was like hard to like feel like, oh, comfortable in the gym as like a young trans woman in sort of like revealing tight workout clothes or like then too big clothes. It just like was not a fun experience. So I worked at home. Now that I'm a little bit older and like dysphoria isn't really a concern that I've dealt with in a very long time, I have sort of been like reintroducing myself to it. And really this time I feel like I'm coming at the gym, and I've talked about this before, like through purely health way now, right? Like a health and mental wellness sort of vibe. Like the effect on my body is like sort of secondary, but I freaked myself out.
Unfortunately, I'm all about vanity. Like,
yeah.
And I think that's like, and I hate to say that, like this is, and I'll get into this later because it's like kind of relevant to stuff that happens in the episode. But like, I'm catching myself being on a real like vanity sort of like,
well,
wave,
you know,
at the moment. And
like,
it's a little like, it's becoming grating.
Well,
it's
I think what it is, it's
just tilted over into antisocial, and we need to reel it back.
I think what it is, T-wise, as your friend, who I mean, I love you, and I think that you're valid no matter what, your non-binary T is valid, is that I think that you had a significant amount of affection, love, and attention sort of taken away from your daily life, and you have been seeking to probably replace that love, attention, and affection in other areas. Just a little bit. Yeah. Just a little bit, you know? So I don't think that's bad, but I was going to say, like,
I don't think it's bad in itself, but I think it can. And it's certainly explained, but I think
it's probably not great for you in the long term.
Oh, yes.
Going to say, I had a conversation a doctor as I'm approaching 30, which sounds so annoying to say out loud. But I was trying to double down on long term health concerns. And my family has a history of Alzheimer's and cancer on different sides of the family. And my doctor was saying one of the long term benefits of working out is that muscle mass and blood flow and cardio have really positive effects on cancer outcomes or the risk of Alzheimer's and just other long-term stuff that my family deals with. So I've been sort of scaring myself into that. And then it sort of removes all the body stuff where all of that the effect on me is that's all secondary. And instead I have replaced it with a different anxiety, not motivated by an eating disorder or inducing needless dysphoria.
That's
and I found that to be very helpful. I know it's probably not totally healthy, but let's replace one unhealthy coping mechanism with another.
I had a conversation with my friend Sarah this week where it's we got to think somewhat similarly because it's a similar thing in a different thing in a similar way.
Yeah.
Or it's sometimes you have to trick yourself into doing the thing, which is and it was actually kind of on the same topic. We were talking about it was rather than telling myself that being superficial or focused on vanity and desirability is not a thing that one should do as a person, impair your personal and interpersonal development. You can get at it by actually it's way more swaggy to act like you don't care about these things.
Yeah.
That will actually make you more fuckable. Therefore, in order to be more fuckable, you have to stop caring about these
things. Oh, I mean, this is
actually buy into its logic to subvert it. And I was like, you know what? If I have to trick my idiot gay brain into doing something healthy, then I will.
You know what? I was about to say something so not incorrect, but maybe real about that. But I feel the inverse is true for trans people, where I have noticed this and I have talked to a lot of different people about this, that there is sort of a bell curve to the attention that we get sexually or socially on the internet, where when you're early in your transition, when you're early in your transition and sort of desperate, and I'm not saying that in a judgmental way, but
but it's like that.
Desperate to be desired and connected validated. To and validated, that there is an energy that you put off that other sorts of people sort of pick up on and flock to you over, that
and can prey on it because it telegraphs vulnerability.
I've noticed that in the engagement that I used to get on the internet versus the kind of engagement that I get now, where once you feel maybe a little more embodied or you come off a little more embodied or self-assured, confident, that sort of thing,
clothes that you want to wear, the attention you want to be in,
actually
the online attention,
craters, and it's so interesting. And I do think that there is an element of feeling
they threatened. Hate a pretty girl.
I mean,
they hate a pretty girl.
You want to learn, you want to live out pretty girl, let's hate on her, you should take some estrogen.
I love how that's actually as a principle is true. Let's all hate the pretty girl. But there is, because literally it's someone who is feeling themselves and it feels somewhat assured is actually
No, it's
not
about being punished in a way.
Not attractive for taking advantage of.
Yeah, and this is not me saying that, a lack of thirst.
They hate a pretty girl.
Yeah, a lack of thirst.
They hate it when you're real.
Yeah, a lack of thirst responses on tweets when you're not tweeting, I'm a big, ugly man and I hate myself is not, an axis of oppression, obviously. But it is an interesting dynamic into, the socialization around, beauty and desirability on the internet.
It's important to talk about, patterns of behavior without... Yeah. It only being in frames
100%. That's why I wanted to clarify.
You know what I mean? But it's important. Sometimes I'll just be and sometimes I've noticed this on Twitter or even in conversations with people.
Yeah.
I'll make an observation and he'll be like, oh, what does that mean? I'm like, yeah, nothing.
Yeah, but you know, something I also said.
Well, what about this thing and this thing? And it's I'm not saying that this is a rule of society or it's structurally built in, but it's I don't know, what's the deal with airline food? You know,
the thing is this, I was actually thinking about this in a different way earlier. I don't know if you, I mean, we both followed Jamie on Twitter. One of the few like divining rods on that platform that can sort of just like whip up conversation at seemingly the drop of a hat. And she tweeted about this statistic that someone had said, like, I don't know how we're supposed to think about like partying and having a social life and working 40 hours a week and working out and cleaning all in the week. Like, it's impossible to think that we can do all of that. Yeah. And Jamie just like casually remarked, being flippant, of course, which and I say that in a nice way. I actually like Jamie.
Someone's got to do it.
Someone's got to do it. But, you know, if we actually, if you look at your screen time and your screen time seems to be high every month, maybe use all that screen time to do the other things like going out, seeing your friends.
It is astonishing cleaning, how cooking, much time can be taken up by staring at your phone.
And my point.
And literally like. No, you should make your point before I say it.
Yeah, my point was that. No. I was thinking about this with the gym, actually, and like more so like this conversation that I sort of saw in reaction to Jamie's post about like there is a lot of people, I think, that like live a certain kind of way where they don't seem to think they have like any choices in life or like that they can't make decisions. And like, there are so many things that prevent us from living like full, complete lives, obviously. But it is always interesting when like I start working out again and like I hate to sound like a grind set mindset type of person because that's not who I am at all. But like there are so many things where I was like, okay, I'm tired from work. I am like meeting friends later. I feel so overwhelmed, etc. And I want to work out, but like, oh, do I really want to work out? And really the thing that made me get up and work out was Kim Kardashian's "Nobody Wants to Get Up and Work Anymore." Not exactly that, but like I can just decide to not watch TV or not stare at Twitter for 2 hours and just like spend that 2 hours walking to and from the gym.
Yeah. Sometimes like, it's hard. Sometimes it's hard to do that. Like it's not like it's not easy. But like when I do that, I'm like, oh yeah, I just did it.
Yeah, there is like a choice to it where you're just
I did choose to.
I got up and I made it happen. Yeah. And I hated every minute of it, but it happened. You know, you can just decide that.
I have no
that.
Choice but to be the author of my own destiny, unfortunately.
That's how I've been feeling, though. And my larger point was going to be like, that's how I've been feeling since my divorce finalized, which is, thank God, because I never have to talk about it again. But I, you know, obviously dyed my hair red and there's like a lot of big changes in my life. Career-wise.
Such as I dyed my hair.
No, like career-wise, working out, like making all of these like really sort of like life altering decisions for myself. And like I have realized, like I felt, I think, so paralyzed for so long that this like weight was hanging over me, and it like really, I didn't quite realize until it was off of my back how much that weight was sort of like threatening all other areas of my life, where like the time I spent thinking about it and the time I spent avoiding thinking about it and the time that was sort of like formed around its like existence in my life still was like immediately freed up. And I was like, okay, I actually don't have to sit around all the time anymore. I actually can just like get up and change my life.
Yeah.
Like it's the only thing really stopping me so was me. And it was obviously a hard thing to go through. And it took me until the end of it to really find sort of like a freedom from it. But like, it has been so liberating to be like, oh my God, it is literally that easy to like wake up, dye your hair red, and go to the gym. Like it actually is that easy.
When you don't have something hanging over your head, this is a thing that I don't know. I think it's often underestimated, like the weight of a preoccupying matter. It is preoccupying. Like, literally,
I mean, look
like,
at you the last couple weeks. I feel like you can also kind of speak to like how much something that has sort of like affected your heart, your spirit, your mind can sort of like derail like
it's complete,
so
it's,
many
it overwhelms
things in
everything.
Your life. Yeah, and it's,
like,
and it's
I don't know. This is something that's also like, so this is, I guess, the other thing that the looking at the phones thing is kind of about, or the thing that on my Twitter feed that my friends were pointing out that it reminded them of was that there was the poem, some guy's poem that was like clearly, I guess, like a slam poem that was like posted
about doing laundry and caring about Gaza
type thing. And it was just like, you're just looking at it, and I think people, you know, anytime someone posts something that's tacky on the internet, there's like the responses are, there's like, oh, I don't like this, which is like a legitimate response. And then things kind of tip over and be like, this is the worst thing ever made. It's like, calm down. But so like, I'm not going to go that far. But I think it's like, it's interesting that like, just because like, that's the other angle into it where it's like, I think I don't like the poem because I think it was aesthetically unsuccessful. And I like had an argument with my friend about that because he like didn't get or like what I meant by that. But I was just like, I wanted to do something more with language. Like any kind of poem that I think is going to, is expressing a trite thought, it should do something interesting with language. And I didn't like what it did. So like, whatever, subjective. But the other thing was also like, you know, it's lame to lay it out in that kind of way, but there is this actual experience that we're having, which is like, oh, like, why am I actually just like feel like I have an overall reduced capacity to like live in the world? And it's like, oh yeah, because I'm like keenly aware of like dozens of brutal and preventable deaths every single day. Like,
yeah,
that's,
I mean,
really,
we,
that's upsetting.
You wake
which is
up
saying
and
nothing
the first,
of the actual experience of like enduring it or having family.
No, 100%. We're
like,
not likening
like,
that
I'm
at
incredibly
all,
removed
but it's
from
like,
the experience. And it's
but
so
I think
predominant.
The alienation,
so I can't even imagine.
I think the alienation still does have like a profound impact on us, regardless of, you know, again, we would never liken our experiences to anyone currently living through it. But like, it is profoundly alienating to like wake up in the morning and then see the first thing you do when you open your phone is the photo of a man who has been crushed to death by a tank.
Yes.
And then you go to a workplace that, in my case, censors your speech or like, you know,
you're, like, you're in a situation where you can't even talk about it. This is the thing
you're
that's
like
driving me
punished
crazy.
For
it's,
thinking
it's
about it or talking about
doing
it. Yeah.
But it's fucking, it's not only that it's somehow legal for fucking Israel to do whatever the fuck it wants. Which is like terrifying enough, but also it's seemingly illegal to dislike it. Like, it's like, oh, like it's like, I'm wrong for thinking this is fucked. Like they're so punitive to like the refusal to cheerlead it on.
Well, it's,
and this is the thing that's been driving me really
crazy. It's watching
crazy
it happen and be
bloodless.
Profoundly affected by it. And then being told that like, the reality that you can see so clearly is actually not real and that you are either delusional or like completely devoid of like, you know, what is the word I'm looking for? Like, oh, that you're like devoid of sense or reason or whatever for like being affected by it. That like
uncivilized, completely unreasonable.
And completely somehow detached from reality. I mean, like I have been confronted with my coworkers, I want to specify here, but like just because of the nature of my work, confronted with people who are in a place now where like I truly believe they are completely fully aware of it, but the only way that they seem to be able to cope with being aware of it is like making sure that everyone else feels fucking crazy and out of control and out of their minds and also delusional. Like, it's this refusal to not even just engage with your own badness or your own complicity, but like, not only am I complicit and I feel horrible and I'm obviously punishing everyone around me for it, but like, I am going to take that out on everyone else by saying that you are making it up. Like, I'm just going to
think there's
not,
something
gaslighting is like, not, there. Yeah. We need another word because
okay,
it
so
has
like,
gone
so there's
beyond.
Something else going on here, I think, too, which is like, or maybe not something else, but something alongside it. I guess this is more for the people who listen to the show because they follow my Patreon, but like if you go back that article that I wrote for I think it was Jezebel one time on the
having conversations one of my I literally quote it every single day. Did you work with Stassa on that piece? Was that Stassa who edited that piece? Stassa Edwards, genius, a fucking genius.
Yeah,
my favorite editor
really,
of all
really
time
to life. So I did like if you'll see on the Patreon, I did sort of like a built out version of it where I like kind of like turned it into a sample chapter. At one point I was going to write a book. And so in the
and
book
you
proposal,
still
you
should.
Have to have, huh?
And you still should.
I still should, but I had to put it on hold because law school was overwhelming. And then it was like, and then I got like scared to edit it basically. Anyway, in any case, I built out it into like a sort of chapter, a sample chapter that was this idea of having conversations in the industrial complex. And one of the things that comes up in it was that like part of the function or logic of this sort of formulation is that, like, to participate in having conversations on, you know, a sort of narrow set of bourgeois terms, is to have reason. And yeah. If you don't participate, then you're unreasonable.
Yes.
And therefore uncivilized, you know, like you're constantly a threat of violence, blah, blah. They like live outside the realm of the sort of like human subject that can be met with anything other than repressive violence. And so then part of, I think there's a kind of the logic in treating solidarity with Palestine, even if it's simply pointing out facts that can be like witnessed by anyone, easily verified. I think the logic of characterizing that as, you know, like totally off the deep end, delusional, idiotic, you don't know anything about anything, is like literally suggesting like you lack reason. I'm allowed to eject you from the sort of like the world of the acceptable political. It's a dehumanizing tactic. It's yeah. like I think it's like part of it is like for themselves maybe to like reconcile or satisfy the sort of dissonance of the violence that they're witnessing with like the so-called ideals that they're espousing.
Yeah.
And I think part of it is actually like literally a dehumanization tactic. I don't know. It's not, maybe not necessarily like, it doesn't have to be conscious to be strategic, if that makes sense. Like, I don't think they necessarily know they're doing it, but I think it's operating subconsciously. And it's because it's sort of like a product of our political discourse. And it's like really like, you know, like we're used to seeing this happen against sort of entire populations basically, but it's but maybe not with this sort of like level of like naked intensity and frequency. And so it's been really I'm always just like I feel insane. There have been a lot of essays written about this. Like recently I think there was one that even like came across my timeline, but I'll be honest, I've been struggling to like read analysis and like, I don't know, maybe I should, because it actually, like, I can imagine a lot of people are thinking through the same questions and fear.
No, literally, I have felt truly out of my mind, and like, I won't talk about it right now. TBD, put a pin in it for next week or 2 weeks from now. So let's talk about Politically Erect, which is an episode of Sex of the City full of bangers. And if you really think about it, is summarized best by really something that I would say is my personal favorite Carrie mid-episode interlude. I will ask if
she accidentally
stumbles
on the essential question of feminism.
Listen.
But from the wrong way, like she doesn't actually get it. Queen.
The politics has always been as relevant as a new Erica Jong novel, but I did find it interesting that a discussion about politics ultimately became a discussion about sex, and a discussion about sex ultimately became a question of politics, which led me to wonder if the two weren't in fact inextricably linked.
Okay, this is one of those moments where she's a good writer.
Can there be like, sex?
Because also be like
politics.
A question of politics is like, you tore that.
No, like a discussion.
That's a turn of phrase, bitch.
A discussion about sex is a discussion about politics, and a discussion about sex ultimately became a question of, discussion of politics ultimately became a discussion about sex, and a discussion about sex ultimately became a question of politics. Like, bitch.
She turned
it. Hey, turned the fucking party. I was watching this with my roommate.
She does
and
a
I
great
gasped.
Job with her voiceovers in this episode.
I was like,
truly. Her voiceovers are good in this episode. They're not like, you know, deeply weird the way that they sometimes are.
Yeah.
She's lines. Like, she makes fun of Stanford a lot without meaning to.
Okay, by the way, I will say first off, we'll talk about sort of the overarching plot later, but like one of my favorite subplots in this episode is that Carrie is a homophobe. Like, actually is a homophobe. Like, we know this from the way that she talks about Stanford. No, she talks about Stanford with contempt basically every time she is forced to hang out with
him with a great sense of humor. You fucking bitch.
No,
you fucking
there's a moment in the episode where they go to a party, Stanford comes, and Stanford sees a DL guy that he has seen skating around the park.
How you DL skating down roller skating down 8th Avenue?
He says that he's like DL. I'm saying that in the world of the
show. He's not openly gay. I mean, remember, this is the late 90s, but he's not openly
he's not openly gay, and they like have sort of like a rendezvous, him and Carrie, this guy, about Stanford, and she's like, you know, do you see that guy over there? He's gay and he wants to meet you. And he's like, oh, the blonde with the buff arms. And she's like,
and the blonde with the great arms.
And she does my favorite thing. She
with the great sense of humor.
She looks behind because she wants to see who he's talking about, because she immediately knows it's not Stanford. Like, he doesn't even say anything. She already knows he's not looking at Stanford. She looks and she's like, actually, the bald guy with the great personality. It's like so good. Not only is she such a bad wing woman, but like hates Stanford. I think that's sort of like the core of their relationship.
She brings him to this party that,
because he's a sycophant,
as part of her fucking unraveling psychosis, panic about getting married. She's losing it by the
end
of this
episode.
No,
we'll talk about that in a second.
As part of her fucking like spiral out, she like throws a party where like people have to bring guys that they're not seeing anymore.
Inspired, by the way, by Elizabeth Banks telling her she met her husband at a party of throwaway boyfriends.
And Carrie brings Stanford, and then she's
Elizabeth
just like,
Banks, is that her name?
And she like makes some joke about it, but it's funny that the bit is like, literally, it's like you are telling him like, oh, like I am rejecting you, and then bringing him to a party where the whole point is straight people meeting each other
Elizabeth
to
Banks.
Date.
Uh-huh. Like, no, I mean, it's
mean.
Like a... I'm sorry.
You're setting him up to just be rejected and ignored the entire night. Like,
yes.
Why would you do that? Like, you're being
weird. No, well, because she wants him to be sort of like a sycophant. Like,
yeah.
She just brings him around to soothe the ego.
If he gets laid, then he can't be her fucking, like, purse dog.
Because that's what he's there for. I mean, again, every time
like,
she
then
brings...
he'll start wearing normal clothes and start living his own life.
Well, okay, here's the thing. Stanford comes around when Carrie is making decisions that she knows the other girls aren't going to agree with. And he's sort of just like the gay lapdog that will yes queen her no matter what
he's
she does.
He's
like,
literally. He's the one who'll say yes to her stupid ideas, because ultimately he's a misogynist and he doesn't want what's best for her.
No! That's
they're
why
both
every
they're both
time,
terrible for each other. They're terrible
every
to
time
each other.
Carrie's about to make like a fundamentally life-alteringly bad decision, Stanford is like waiting in the wings like, yes, do it, bitch. Blow your life up, bitch. Like,
he's such a creep. Or do it. Yeah, because Stanford is the thing is that, like, because she is like always gonna take a man's side, and sometimes she's like in the wrong, and she can see if Charlotte's agreeing with her, then she's like, it's like, well, I don't have to take Charlotte seriously because she's like, she's a prude and like, and she's clearly nuts, but I still need someone who is gonna tell me to do whatever the thing is that's basically just like to try to make a man happy. Who is more misogynistic than all the people I know? Stanford Blatch. Like,
okay, no, but this is the other thing that I
love men more than anyone else.
This is the thing I also love about it, though, is like, there's ladies who listen to this podcast, but especially the trannies. Let me give you a piece of advice right now. Okay.
Well, actually, trannies are ladies.
No, I'm just saying, especially those of you that are ladies plus.
I'm like, actually?
Whoa. So I'll say this, and it's a piece of advice y'all don't want to hear, and I get it, but I'm here as an elder to you to give you just something that I think will like make your 20s a little bit easier. The most dangerous man to a trans woman is a self-loathing faggot. Say that with me one more time. The most dangerous man to a trans woman is a self-loathing faggot. He will always be at the scene of the crime. Know that. He will be at the scene of the crime. He will tell you that you should wear that sports bra and jean combo to the club and you're going to feel really good about yourself. And then he's going to take a picture of you and you're going to hate the way you fucking look. And you're going to say, who let me go out of this house in this fucking outfit? I hate this. And you know who's going to be right there holding the camera, taking the picture, posting it on social media? That fucking faggot. He lives for you feeling bad about yourself, because there is nothing he wants more in this world than the sweet, release of your pain from the ennui of his existence. It is the only thing allowing him to cope with the fact that he is balding in his 20s, okay? He's balding in his 20s and experiencing a premature twink death, and he wants you to pay for it. He wants you to be the one that suffers. He wants you to be the vessel for all of that hatred that he feels because his mom didn't hold him enough as a child because she was Christian and she didn't believe in that sort of thing.
Everyone say aloud the name of the guy who popped into your head. Ready?
Say it.
1, 2, 3.
Say it. Say it. telling you.
The way this actually painted a vivid picture, you needed to delete this from my memory.
I'm just saying. I'm telling you from experience. Mm-hmm. I release you. I release you from Brad and his twink death. I mm-hmm. release you from him. Be free. Be free of the Stanford Blatch in your life, okay? Be free of it. He told you.
I have to.
He told you to buy that Dior saddlebag you could not afford.
Unfortunately, I have a thought about this that I cannot put on.
Say it.
Say it.
Say it. Say it.
No, there's no way they still. I had a.
Don't say the name. Just don't say the name.
Oh, I had a friend like this. And many of the same characteristics.
I'm Bene Gesseriting you right now. I'm full Lady Jessica and Dune. You will say the name.
And arguably another person, but I guess now I'm a gay guy, so who knows?
Oh, are you a gay guy now? Is that what we're calling you?
Sometimes.
Do I have permission to
when
gay
I
wanna
guy
get
laid?
You?
Yeah. Oh my
Ultimately,
God. I didn't tell you.
A discussion
about
sex
for the first time the other day.
Became a question of politics, you might say.
Wait, I had to tell you, I went to a bathhouse for the first time the other day.
And how was that for you? Is it your whole personality now?
I fear maybe a little bit.
Was it like a Turkish bathhouse?
Because it's like, no, I mean, I've done that before. I've done like a banya before, but this was like Steamworks, like a gay bathhouse.
Hmm.
And I was like, wait, this, it's like, yay. Anyway, this is a new arc that I think is going
to
like.
I'm
really,
the girl in the steam room ringing the little snitch bell that they have to alert them that you're sucking dick.
The music there's is
a,
really good.
There's a button.
That was
under
actually
the
main thing for me.
There's a button under the
like,
bench and I'm
eats.
Pressing it. There's a button under the bench. I'm pressing it to let them know that you're fucking in the steam room. Mm-hmm. I'm the
have
steam.
Have you ever been to the Russian Turkish baths in New York?
Not in New York, but I've been in San Francisco.
The ones that are a subject of like, interesting Instagram reels.
Well, those actually started out as TikToks that became Instagram reels.
Mm-hmm. You're like internet historian. You're like, so actually those started off as TikToks.
Yeah, that was because a straight guy went and then felt sexually harassed by gay guys at the baths, which is so funny to be like, I went to this place notoriously for gay male sex in public, notorious for that, and then felt weird when the gay male sex started to happen around
it's
me.
It's only like Sunday
Which,
morning.
By the way, I also don't believe. I think he knew. I think he wanted it, and I think he just had a bad reaction and then made a TikTok about how he
many such cases, many such
felt
cases.
Bad about it. You know,
many
we,
such cases.
Many men loathe the thing that they secretly crave. Mm-hmm.
Many such cases. Speaking of a self-hating
well,
gay man, a self-hating guy.
The thing I was going to say also is just like speaking about music and you, I threw a house party this weekend that was very successful. It wasn't very big. You know, COVID is like a concern and like also
COVID is a concern. Yeah,
COVID's a concern,
true.
But also like
you
people
know.
Got COVID.
That is literally
so,
true, but it's funny to just be like,
no,
oh yeah, COVID
yeah, you know,
is a concern.
COVID a concern. I wanted it to be like a maskless event, so like everyone had to take tests. And the reason that it was also a little smaller is that some people tested positive, so like a big chunk of the party couldn't travel for it, which was totally fine. That's why we required tests.
Oh,
so
they
that
were traveling. You're right.
Some people were traveling for it from New York, other places, and so anyways, and then like just stuff came up, but it was still a successful party. And I actually used, it was not the only thing that I played, but the night culminated in your set at the Eagle, which I ripped from SoundCloud. Thank you very much. And it was so much fun. I had a moment where like the music that I had curated ended And I did like a little speech that was basically me saying like, hey, everybody, like I'm about to turn all the lights off and turn the strobes on and we're going to start doing drugs. And
okay, we're going to the club now.
Yeah. I was like, I was like, I know we've all had a nice time like dancing to like Charlie XCX remixes and like Lady Gaga. But like we're going to the club now. So
I love when a house party becomes the club.
Yeah, that was kind of the whole vibe. But I let everyone know at like midnight, right, when it turned, as I was like, if you don't want to be like in complete darkness with strobes and heavy dancing, like you can go drink on the porch, go somewhere else. But like, I'm just giving you a heads up.
Yeah.
And most people survived, actually. And so you know what it's for. And it was fun, too, because my house is sort of perfect for like actually having a dance floor inside of it. So everyone got to keep their shoes on. It was really fun. I looked fucking hot as shit. And overall, it was like a really successful night, but people loved your set.
Thank you.
I have a friend who really, really loves like actual DJ sets and we go see them frequently. Shout out Callie. I know you're probably listening to this. And afterwards, Callie was like, I fucking love that music. It was so good. It was so good.
Thank you so much.
That set was so good.
That was honestly one of my favorites.
You tore with it so fucking hard.
It was so much fun to play live. It was so,
Next time you come to New York, I have to come see you.
Thought about it, and it was so much fun because it was like there were some things that were actually like new additions, like when I inclusions when I played it, and it was just like fun to see and like try to make adjustments to. There was like some tech house song my friend Bunny suggested. It was like another light, another night out, another dance floor, and like literally just like see I'm like stoned. That sounded awful on mic. It was so funny to see literally the dance floor suddenly fill up because like all the patrons at the bar was like it was like an opening set. This was like 10:15 or something, so there's not a lot of people there, but like literally that song came on and then everyone who was at the front of the bar actually just came onto the dance floor because they just wanted to dance to that song. It's like, okay, wait, that worked.
No, and I will say, since the last time I talked to you, I also found a party in Philadelphia where it actually had like really good music, like proper, like a proper DJ set that was like so fucking fabulous, and the cover was reasonable, and all of the gay guys were in like thong, like those like thong overalls with like mesh, and like it was like that kind of gay guy at the party, and I was like, I've finally found it. I found the promised land of Philadelphia. Great. No, I walked in and the person who had invited me was like, oh, it's like not necessarily the vibe or whatever, and I walked in and I clocked literally an old queen in a suede trucker hat and a too tight white tank top and large cargo pants. And then another one with a teeny little Jacquemus purse and like a mesh top. And I went, I'm home. This is home. Like I found it. I found it. And that 40-year-old faggot danced with me all fucking night. Didn't even catch his name. Not once. Complete. Just eye contact dancing. It's me against the music, bitch. It was fun. I thought of you the whole night. I was like, oh, this was fun. I wish Alex was here. So
I really do have to visit.
And I have a good house. I have a spare bedroom, which I'm recording from right now. And you would like it. But I was going to say, so there's this other quote in it that I have been thinking about that is about the very transgender plot line that Samantha has. We have gone a while without like a proper transgender episode for Samantha, and this one knocked it out of the park. So
she
starts dating a guy that's like way too short, and too short for her. I'm not saying that a man can be too short.
He's so fucking hot, he puts some moves on her. He's cute. He looks like a hotter Al Pacino.
Yeah, no, he's so hot. But I'm just saying, like, he's too short for her. She kind of makes note of
and
it.
She freaks out about it because she has a crisis about her height.
Yes, no, exactly, exactly.
And she's dysphoric about like, you know, what are people going to think about her if they see her dating a trans man?
I think that the trans angle of this, people are going to think that he is a trans guy, but I don't think, see, I didn't read him as a trans guy.
Yeah, it's not really giving I read him
as a short chaser, but, and this is why many such cases, by the way, chasers love to be short. But I was going to say, the reason why
when this episode hits Netflix and everyone starts tweeting about it, like, that's what we're going to see at first. Don't fall for it.
Because this is the tell. He clocks her in their first date and says, I can tell you have the legs for the sport. Clocked. But So we start talking about this. They are talking about him being too short. She is like inviting him out to that party that we mentioned where it's like, mm-hmm. bring your ex-boyfriend and maybe someone else will like him. He freaks out about it. He's like, bitch, I got a huge cock and I know how to use it. Let me go one more time. So,
that's so funny.
She comes like 15 times in one night. They're at a dinner. She sees that he has a boys jacket on from like the boys section of Men's Warehouse. And she's like, okay, I can't date a man who buys boys clothes, like children's clothes. So she starts to leave. He confronts her and she says the line of the century, like truly the line of the century. This episode is cooking, Alex.
There's a lot of good lines. There's a lot of
You're
good lines.
You're nothing.
We can't get into detail of all of them, but like at home, viewers at home, like settle in.
He says, she says, you're nothing but a big dick with a little man attached. And he said, you're nothing but too much leg with an oversexed whore on top or something.
No,
like,
not,
to
like,
that
a, like a pair of tits with, yeah. With too much leg room.
Yeah.
But he does call her. She said, but the whore part was because at one point she was like, I can't go out with a guy who gets clothes at the boys department.
Yeah.
And he was like, where do you buy your clothes? The Big and Tall Whore Store? Funny as fuck.
No, that's what it was. So he says, the Big and Tall
Whore
Store.
And then,
yeah.
Whore
and then he says, you're nothing but a pair of tits with too much leg. And I was like, whoa. But
oh,
the thing
fucking
is,
fucking.
They're fucking. But I'll say this. Ladies, again, I'm freeing you. It's going to be hot at first when the trans guy talks to you like that, because he's going to be like, you know, there's going to be like an element of self-loathing to it. There's going to be an element of like, oh, I kind of like that. Like, he's real, you know? Mm-hmm. And I will tell
you.
We get each other.
It's
oh,
okay.
Like, we can laugh. But like, baby, I'm telling you, that's actually what he thinks about you. Like,
yeah, that's why they didn't. Trans guys love to like.
Well, again, I'm saying chasers.
Joking,
I'm saying chasers.
Oh, you said trans guys before.
Oh, did I say trans? No, I said ladies. When
no,
you
let
meet,
it happen. No, you said the trans guy, not the chaser.
Oh, well, let me clarify. The
well,
the
let's
chasers,
just generalize. Men.
Men will talk
men.
To you like this.
The man.
Yeah. The man will talk to you
man.
Like this.
Because
and you're
going to
think that it's
like,
fun, but it's not fun.
With people, and you'll be like, and you're like, oh, this is a joke, but it's not. Anyway. This
no.
is, yeah. Anyway, but it's fun for, she dates him for 2 weeks, which is the appropriate amount of time to date
she
someone.
She says that, they, and buy. Carrie makes the joke like, and that was a pretty significantly long relationship for Samantha.
Yeah. Yeah.
So she really
likes
him.
2 weeks is the appropriate amount of time. This
you
also,
know, all
okay,
she really needed,
also reminds
all
me,
she really needed is, like, a slightly douchey, she got it, she had to have the, like, one slightly douchey Republican and get it out of her system, mm-hmm. and then she's free of it. She's free yeah. of, well...
Shit. Oh, this reminds me of up.
Free of it
Carrie,
for most.
Carrie opens the episode by being like, she's been dating this guy for 3 weeks, the politician. Uh-huh. And it's like funny that it's like 3 weeks, dating for 3 weeks says everything about their dynamic in this episode.
Yes.
It says everything.
No.
Dating for 3 weeks is so...
She talks
like,
about being JFK.
You spoke real about that one.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
She talks about being JFK and Jackie Kennedy, and
she looks cunt in this
dude,
first scene.
To talk about it.
I have to allow her.
She says,
her.
Quote, I think we made a good match. I was adept at fashion. He was adept at politics. And really, what was the difference? They're both about recycling old ideas and making them seem fresh and inspired. And I was like, whoa, Carrie, again, you're getting into semiotics. You're getting into the discourse. Mm-hmm. You're getting into duality.
No, this shit is in different areas.
You're getting into like politics of sex. It was so good. Mm-hmm. So there's there's a scene. They have sex and she has this great line. That was the night I had my political consciousness raised. And I'm like, you bitch. She really was cooking this whole episode.
She was cooking. She had a lot of good lines this episode. There's also a bit where she's like, okay, so like the short version of her storyline is that this guy wants her to piss on him.
Yeah,
and she's freaked.
She doesn't
she's,
want to.
She's freaked out by it. But it's funny how like there's a part in the end, her she doesn't want to do it. He keeps broaching it. She doesn't know how to bring it up to him that she doesn't want to do it because she otherwise likes him. But she also like she clearly gets an ick from it. She like she isn't into him anymore basically. And then it's funny because like then she rejects that. She was like, how about we just don't do that? And then he basically breaks up with her for it, but pretends it's about something else.
Yes.
And then she gets him back by
accidentally on basically just like spilling his tea in her column, which is like, okay, nailed it. Like,
nailed
I don't
it.
Like,
no,
I don't think there's necessarily there's, anything to be ashamed of there,
no,
but I think,
but
I think she doesn't
think
play
that
it shamey.
No, the thing is she's like,
which
he wanted
funny.
To he wanted to pee on me, or he wanted me to pee on him. I didn't want to. But the thing that's very interesting about this is there is something very real about power and like the social relationships
yes.
between men and women in like a sexual situation where like men will be okay with at first so many different things about like your job, where you live, your friends, mm-hmm. et cetera, right? Things that they go along with, things that they have no issue with, et cetera. But the second you exert a boundary with those
yeah.
men, suddenly
it's a boundary. It's okay
oh,
to not want to do
so,
something.
It's yeah, suddenly it's, oh, I hate your friends, actually. Or actually, you know what? Your job isn't going to work for me. Or, oh, actually, where you live, I don't actually really want to go over there. Or, oh, actually, I'm not cool with the fact that you have a dog. This thing that has like previously at that point not been a relationship, not been a contention in your relationship mm-hmm. at all. Something that they sort
3 weeks.
Of pull,
3 weeks.
Yes. And the most interesting thing about this is that like it is really, I think, a perfect exemplification example. I'm like, why can't I just say example there? Perfect example of the way that like women will tell the truth in a relationship and exert a boundary and are punished for that boundary, but men are not courageous enough to just re-exert their own boundary, right? His thing is, I really want to get peed on, and that is what I think I deserve in this relationship, and that's fine. Own it. And she's like, I don't want to pee on you. That is a perfect reason to separate, but he can't say that. He
yeah.
can't live
like, oh,
up
well,
to the
well, we
fact.
Don't want the same things, actually.
Yeah.
And luckily, we've only been dating for 3 weeks, so it kind
no,
of...
No, he has
maybe
to
we can
punish.
Find out something he's, else, but he feels... I think
ego,
he just feels embarrassed.
His ego is wounded. He's a politician.
Yeah.
He thinks
he's
powerful.
He's embarrassed by her not wanting to do whatever he wants.
Yeah. And she says the greatest line of the series. I mean, my fucking God. I realized that politics had not only entered my bedroom, but my bathroom as well. And I decided then that my bravest political act would be to tell the truth. Of course, I didn't use his real name. It was much more political not to. Tor, bitch. Tor.
The internal references. She's a poet.
She's
a poet.
A poet. She's kind of like the most linguistically... challenging
she's
woman
being a writer in this episode,
of
actually.
The entire world. I mean,
she's
William
really
Shakespeare. You gotta go, so I have nothing
to
add.
Oh, no, yeah, but,
add.
But there's a couple more parts, because I have a couple more notes. We already covered
yeah,
Stanford.
Yeah.
Really quickly, Charlotte's, like, Charlotte's
psychosis.
Spiraling.
Charlotte
it's
is in
way worse.
Psychosis.
I mean, and, like, look, that was, like, for a second, that was me this week, where I'm just like, oh! But it's,
yeah.
like, she's really, like it's hit a fever pitch for her where she's like, I am not going to be happy unless I get married.
Yeah.
And it's like, and she, you can see her unraveling this like desperation. She like this party, I think is a really antisocial weird idea. but like, and as a gimmick, and she also plays it wrong. She's so like the whole time she's like literally like determined to see the best in every guy. As like him as like a perfect god because she wants his approval. It's really not healthy. So I feel for her because this is going to get worse over the season until she meets Trey and then it'll kind of blow up on it. But but there's also this is a great Miranda episode. This is a great Miranda episode, and I think we need to like devote a little bit of time to talking about it because this is like Steve is coming back with his A game.
No.
Okay. The big picture of the plot is that she's considering Steve wants to advance their relationship, and she's unsure about it because she's like, "Am I just settling? Like, what? Like, do I really like him that much? I don't know." And the answer is yes to both. But I really like how he sort of addresses it. He like really like he's just like being direct and making his intentions clear. Then he also doesn't put too much pressure on her. Like, I think he's and we also get to see them having hot sex.
Yeah. Oh my God. Oh my God. I mean, Tor with the sex this episode.
Oh my God. And his little premature I love you afterwards, he sort of just like holds her. He's like still cupping her breasts. And he's like, I can't remember the exact line of it, but I'll paraphrase. But it was just like, you know, like I didn't mean to like make things a little bit weird by telling you I kind of wanted to be exclusive. But like, I also just had to let you know how I was feeling. You know, I think you're really special. And.
Yeah.
I love you.
T.
So, like, there you go. And it was like, wow, way to do that. Like, I don't know.
I thought that was so hot.
Tor.
I was
no,
really into
I
it.
Think the thing that like I really liked about this was actually it was really like deeply concerned with sort of like Miranda, and I'm gonna say a word here and no one's gonna like the word and I don't give a fuck, Miranda's interiority as a character. I said it because, and I say it because there is something that is actually very interesting about this, where like Carrie has, as the outside observer who seems to know all, a very astute observation about the way that Miranda sees not necessarily just people, but herself as well, right? Like mm-hmm. we talk about self-loathing, we talk about criticality of yourself and the people around you and your partners, whatever, what have you. And nobody more exemplifies that on this show than Miranda, because Carrie mm-hmm. in one of the, what is it called? Fucking, I can't even think about it. Commentary. What is it called? Mm-hmm. Commentary.
Voiceover. Narration.
I'm also high. She says,
it well this
quote,
whole time, or just Miranda, like rolling through it.
Miranda wasn't sure she was ready to let Steve win by default.
Yeah. Such a
it's
good line.
Such an interesting
such
observation.
I actually wrote it down too, because win by default, because that is such a concept. That's such
it's
an experience.
A concept, and it is a way, it is so the way that Miranda sees the world, that like she sees men as settling for her. And that's mm-hmm. the thing that I think is like really sort of like beautiful about how subtle that line is, because on its face it's like Miranda's judgmental. She says, Miranda, you're the most judgmental person I know, put it to good use. And like we're sort of like meant to believe that like, oh, Miranda's being too critical of him, she's being too critical of him, but really what that sentence shows,
but she
is
never
it's
actually does
herself
that.
She's critical of
yeah she never sees, judges she never does the accounting of Steve
no,
that
because,
Carrie suggests
because what she really
she
thinks
only does
is
it of herself
when she says she wasn't sure she was ready to let him win by default. I think really in that it's she doesn't want him to settle for her. She doesn't think she really deserves it, right? Mm-hmm. There's always this like kind of keeping him at arm's length. And I think again, the beauty of her character
love.
Is that part of her that really doesn't think she deserves love. She pushes men away because she doesn't truly believe that they can be like as good as Steve seems on paper, right? Like mm-hmm. he's too good on paper. You're not the right type of boyfriend for me. We're obviously not a match. And it's like, no, actually, you just don't want to accept that he genuinely wants to be with you. You deserve to fuck his huge hairy cock every single night for the rest of eternity and smell his like beautiful sweaty armpits and like nuzzle in between his giant pecs. You don't believe that. You don't believe that like you get that you deserve that, but you do. You actually do deserve to guzzle his hairy balls every single night for the rest of your life if you so desire.
His strong,
and get
large,
fucking
hairy hands
railed,
cupping your breasts,
fucking
squeezing your
railed.
Tits.
We all
she talks about
that.
Him having a nice ass too. Have you noticed? Remember
yes,
on this episode?
Duh. Of course
she's
I know
like,
that.
I'm like, oh, they're fucking.
And of course
she's
I immediately
she's
Googled
on that
pictures.
Thing.
I immediately Googled pictures of his actor naked.
She's
so.
Gripping and squeezing on that thing.
Not naked, but like shirtless. So I was there.
Say it. Old Steve is hot too.
Old Steve is hot too. Sorry.
Old Steve is hot too.
Old dementia Steve.
Yeah, they really made him old.
But I turned to my roommate this episode as we were watching it on the couch, and I'll leave you here. Is I like priest? Did Steve just like showed up on camera, and I was like, oh man, I love old Steve. Hey Miranda, I love you, dude. And then immediately the first line that's out of his mouth is like, hey Miranda, and I was like, see, I know, I've seen this show so many fucking times. Okay, what a good episode. This is a fun one. This is season 3, episode 2. Politically erect.
Any beautiful women updates?
My beautiful women update is that if you go on Poshmark, you can get those workout clothes you want to spend a lot of money on for like a fraction of the price. All you need to do is alpha up on these suburban moms selling like new workout clothes that they've never worn outside. And you just need to boss up on them. And you say, you listed this workout bra for $100 and I'll buy it off of you for $20. And sometimes they'll let you. Sometimes they'll come back with 30. And if you stand 10 toes down, you can get it for 25, bitch. So that's my beautiful women update. What?
That's good. That's a beautiful women update.
My Beautiful Woman update.
I bossed up on this lady today. I offered $45 for this jumpsuit that she's selling that like retails for $160. It's a workout jumpsuit. Don't ask me why it's $160. I'm not going to answer that question. And I offered that like 2 months ago, and I saw that she lowered the price after 2-3 months of it not selling. So I came back and I offered lower than I did last time. And you know what? She accepted it. So that is the power of a boss bitch female. Know yeah. that.
Here's
that
Beautiful Woman update. Put it up on your walls.
Put it up on your walls.
Put it up on your walls. Put a nail in the wall.
Oh, I thought you were going to say.
It's
gonna fine. I thought this was going to be a semen thing or like
nope.
a
nope.
sex thing.
It's home decor, bitch. Put a nail in the wall.
Okay, T.
You'll thank me later. It's
T.
better.
T.
Okay, there we go.
3, 2, 1. Goodbye, beautiful women.
Bye, beautiful women.
Mwah.
Crushed it. Is